From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Alyssa Block.
And I'm Robert Siegel. This time last year, it was a dark day on Wall Street. The storied investment bank Lehman Brothers collapsed, setting off a chain of events that plunged the global economy into crisis. Congress will soon hold lots of hearings to study those events, to learn from them, and to find ways to prevent a future crisis. The former Colorado Senator Ben Nighthorse Campbell has spent a lot of time at hearings like those, and he points out one flaw they all share.
Oh, God, it's boring. Yeah, that's right. I think it was the most boring thing I ever did. And to say nothing, I didn't understand some of that stuff.
Well, we are here to help. NPR's Planet Money team and the Pew Charitable Trusts conducted an experiment. We wanted to see if we could hold a hearing that was not boring and not so hard to understand. Adam Davidson and Alex Bloomberg hosted a panel of leading experts at Pew's offices here in Washington to discuss how to rewrite the rules of American finance. They met before a live audience.
When I report on complicated issues like financial market reform, I want to make sure the stories make sense to the average person, the non-expert, someone like my dad. So at the Pew event, Alex made a special introduction.
I would like to introduce Adam's dad, Jack Davidson.
All right. So, Dad, I'm giving my dad this bell. Dad, ring the bell. Right. When any of the panelists or the presenters say something that's completely confusing, just ring the bell, and that's a message that you guys have to translate what you're saying to plain English.
With the bell handy to stop any confusion, it was time to bring up the experts. The goal for the night was to see if it's possible to find consensus. Are there financial reforms that Democrats and Republicans, bankers and consumers, can all agree on? Or will the process be endlessly locked in a battle between different interests?
First up was Adam Levitin, a Georgetown law professor with a decidedly consumer-focused approach. He said that a major cause of the financial crisis last year was the fact that there are so many different financial regulators in the U.S. that financial firms could play one against the other. Like, take the case of disgraced mortgage firm and bank Countrywide Financial.
Countrywide had been a national bank. And they didn't like the regulation they were getting from the OCC. So they went to the Office of Thrift Supervision, which were another bank regulator. And they said, what can you offer us if we switch our charter and, you know, bring our business to you? Well, Office of Thrift Supervision said, we'll let you choose your own appraisers. And once in, when that opened the door to all kinds of mischief at Countrywide.
people. Bank, they can shop for who regulates them?
Yes. That's what's amazing about this.
No, they cannot.
That's Diane Casey Landry with the American Bankers Association, the largest bank trade group in Washington. She was another expert speaking at this event. One note for Adam's dad and the rest of us. When bank experts refer to shopping a charter, they mean the process by which banks switch from one regulatory agency to another.
They can, and this is a core part of banking. If you were to take a banking regulation class at any law school in the United States, the main topic would be who regulates institution and how does the institution find the best regulator for it.
But the reality is that you're talking about it from a classroom. You might as well go out there and be an examiner and realize that people do not shop their charters.
Don't shop their charters. Just look at Colonial, which failed recently. They were moving their charter all over the place as soon as the regulators got wise to them.
We have 8,200 banks in this country, 96% of which are well-capitalized and are well-run institutions. We have a fraction of which today are problematic, and the reality is you don't regulate and set new regulations of an entire government bureaucracy because of several institutions that have failed, and even if we get a couple hundred, the reality is we still have a well-banked system.
And the system hasn't worked, and it's hurt a lot of people.
So Levitin, the consumer advocate, says the crisis revealed fundamental flaws in our regulatory system. For Casey Landry, the system is sound. It just needs a few tweaks. But Levitin said that doesn't mean they have to be enemies all the time.
I think we can agree that there needs to be a uniform regulatory umbrella for all types of institutions offering financial products. Banks should not be playing with a different set of rules than non-banks. That the mortgage brokers should be regulated just like banks.
Is that?
I agree with that.
Oh, whoa.
But that's about all I agree with. But I agree with that.
My goodness, Alex, we got a minor miracle, a tiny shred of agreement between a consumer advocate and a bank advocate.
This brief moment of agreement did not last. Later in the evening, things took a turn for the partisan. Michael Barr is Assistant Secretary for the Treasury, obviously a Democrat. Peter Wallison, now with the American Enterprise Institute, worked for President Reagan's Treasury Department. Barr said the Obama administration is proposing strict rules on financial firms that are systemically important, the ones that, if they fail, could bring down the entire economy. Republican Peter Wallison is skeptical.
Okay, let me ask you this then, just a simple question, and that is, how can you tell the difference between a company that, when it fails, will simply cause disruption in the economy, and one that, when it fails, will cause what we're supposed to be protecting against, and that is systemic risk?
I think, Peter, precisely because that question is so hard, you want to build your system so it's more resilient to failure. We need to have a financial system with bigger buffers in the event of failure. Our largest, most complicated firms need to have more capital requirements. They need to have better risk assessments. That's got to be, bigger buffers have to be built in the system precisely because you don't want to be left in a situation
so
in which
you don't,
the
you
government
don't know
in the
which
end is trying to make those.
You don't, first of all, you don't know
I'm
which
not smart enough to know which
about.
Ones those are.
Right, exactly. But
which
someone
ones are,
has
no,
to,
which ones we're going to fail.
You,
I know which ones in advance.
You
I want to have bigger buffers,
you're gonna have to
bigger capital requirements in advance.
You get the idea here. This goes on for a little bit, and then Martin Bailey of the Brookings Institution jumps into the fray.
No.
The regulators didn't do their job. Under your system, why are they going to do their job? Are they going to have more expertise? Are they going to be paid better? What is it in your system that makes sure that next time the regulators do their job? There were rooms full of regulators in these banks that went under.
You need to build in bigger buffers because we're not going to always get it right. I think you need to have a system that is humble, that is able to understand that regulators are going to make mistakes, that financial institutions are going to go too far, they're going to make mistakes, and there are going to be failures. You need to have a system that's more resilient to that.
Adam, you and I started the evening wondering if we could find some basic ideas that pretty much everyone agrees on, a basis for a new, stronger financial system.
And by the end of the evening, the answer was clear. Not yet. Adam Davidson.
And Alex Bloomberg.
NPR News.
If you'd like to listen to more of the hearing that NPR hosted with the Pew Charitable Trusts, check out our Planet Money podcast at npr.org/money.